Greetings and welcome to the Gloucester Daily Times for Tuesday, August 18th, 2026, brought to you by the Talking Information Center, located in beautiful Marshfield, Massachusetts. This is your reader, George Cron. Today's lead story, Candidates to Detail Visions at Forum. It's written by Bobby Grady. KPAN's Democratic committees are hosting an online forum featuring current 5th Essex District State Representative Andrew Drutar and challenger Sarah Wilkinson. It will begin with both candidates discussing their platforms and vision for KPAN, and audience members will be able to ask questions afterwards. The 5th Essex District covers Gloucester, Rockport, Essex, and Manchester-by-the-Sea. Tara is serving out the remainder of Representative Anne Margaret Ferrante's term following her passing last November. He was elected to the position this spring during a special election when Wilkinson ran a write-in campaign. Wilkinson is a former Rockport Select Board member, a position she held for more than 18 years, including 5 terms as chair. Before winning the special election, Tarr worked as a legislative aide on Ferrante's staff for 9 years. On the Republican side of the primary ballot is Manchester-by-the-Sea's Christina D'Alizio, who won the Republican nomination during the special election. Not appearing on the primary ballot will be Essex's Gilbert Frieden, who's running as an independent. Frieden's name, however, will appear on the November 3 election ballot. Whoever is elected November 3rd will serve a 2-year term. Early primary voting begins Saturday. It's written by Christian Wade, State House reporter, Boston. Massachusetts voters can go to the polls beginning this weekend to nominate candidates for U.S. Congress, governor, and other contested races as early voting gets underway, but tens of thousands have already cast ballots through the mail. From Saturday to August 28, cities and towns will allow registered voters to cast early ballots ahead of the September 1 statewide primary. No excuse or justification is required to cast a ballot ahead of time. But many voters have already casted ballots. As of Monday, more than 185,000 primary ballots already had been cast through the mail, according to Secretary of State Bill Galvin's office. To date, voters have requested more than 650,000 mail ballots, most of which have already been sent out, Galvin's office said. The deadline to request a ballot is next Tuesday, August 25th. More than 5 million people are eligible to vote in Massachusetts, election officials say. The majority, about 64%, are not affiliated with a political party. Under Massachusetts' system of open primaries, so-called unenrolled voters can choose a Republican or Democratic ballot. Voters who are registered as Democrats can vote only in the Democratic primary, while Republicans can vote only on the GOP ballot. In the Democratic primary, topping the ballot is a marquee race between incumbent U.S. Senator Ed Markey and challenger Representative Seth Moulton, which has tested loyalties among the party's ranks locally and nationally and is playing out amid a debate over generational change. Markey, 80, who was first elected to Congress in 1976, is running on his experience in Washington and wants voters to send him back to the Senate for another 6 years. He won the Democratic Party's endorsement at its convention in June after picking up more than 70% of the vote from delegates. Moulton, 47, has framed his insurgent primary challenge around the push for generational change in the Democratic Party after it lost the White House and Congress to Republicans in the 2024 election. Moulton picked up nearly 27% of the votes at the convention, more than enough to secure a spot on the Democratic primary ballot. A University of Massachusetts at Amherst WCVB poll released Monday showed Markey with a 60% to 32% lead over Moulton. Previous polls have shown a tightening race. Both candidates have raised more than $12 million since the race got underway, according to the Federal Election Commission's filings. The winner of the Democratic primary will face Republican John Deaton, a cryptocurrency attorney and advocate, making his second run for the U.S. Senate. Voters on the North Shore will also be deciding who will be the Democratic nominee to replace Moulton on the November ballot. A crowded field of 6 hopefuls are vying for the party's nomination. They are Bethany Andrus Beck of Middleton, John Betcha of Linfield, Jamie Belsito of Topsfield, Dan Coe of Andover, Mariah Lancaster of Salem, and Tran Nguyen of Andover. The Wide Open race has been the state's most expensive congressional primary of the cycle, with the candidates collectively raising more than $10 million, according to FEC disclosures. Internal polls released by several of the campaigns have shown a tight race, but there has been no independent polling. The winner of the Democratic primary will face Republican Micah Jones, an Essex lawyer and U.S. Army veteran, in the November 3 election. Jones is running unopposed. U.S. Representative Lori Trahan, a Westford Democrat, is running unopposed on the Democratic primary ballot. She will face Acton Republican Gary Grossi, who is also unopposed on the primary ballot in November. On the Republican ticket, former biotech executive Mike Minogue is facing off against venture capitalist and former MBTA head Brian Shortsleeve in the GOP gubernatorial primary. The winner of the Republican gubernatorial primary will face incumbent Governor Mara Healey, a first-term Democrat who is unopposed on the September 1 ballot. Voters can find sample ballots with the candidates and look up early voting locations and times on the Secretary of State's website, VoteInMA.com. State seeks input on healthcare costs, written by Christian Wade, Boston. The Healey administration is holding a series of, quote, listening sessions to solicit public input on proposed state regulations aimed at lowering healthcare costs and, quote, stabilizing insurance premiums. The Healthcare Affordability Working Group's online listening sessions will focus on recommendations from the State Division of Insurance to reduce excessive out-of-network healthcare costs and reduce premiums in the individual and small group insurance market. Governor Mara Healey said the 30-member working group brings together patients, providers, insurers, and employers to recommend ways to lower healthcare costs. Healthcare costs are too high, and they're putting real pressure on families and small businesses across Massachusetts, she said in a prepared statement. These listening sessions are an important next step in delivering meaningful relief. Beacon Hill officials are seeking ways to blunt the impact of skyrocketing healthcare premiums that officials say are forcing people to make difficult budget decisions in order to afford medical treatment. Healey, a first-term Democrat, has stepped up her administration's efforts to reduce healthcare costs as she seeks another four-year term in office. In January, Healey directed the State Division of Division of Insurance to streamline prior authorizations for a wide range of medical procedures, including emergency and urgent care services, primary care, occupational and physical therapy, and some prescription drugs. Healey's also pumped another $250 million into the state's subsidized health system to help offset the impact of now-expired federal tax credits, which have driven up premiums for many healthcare consumers. The Healey administration has also directed state insurance regulators to pare back proposed healthcare plan rate hikes sought by commercial insurers this year, rejecting two proposals that called for double-digit increases. Insurers have pointed to hospital and prescription drug costs, specifically the booming demand for new weight loss and diabetes drugs, which they say are driving much of the rise in medical expenses for many employers. Other factors driving up medical spending include the use of inpatient and outpatient services, an aging population, and the increased cost of prescription weight loss medicines, the company have said in their filings to regulators. Healthcare costs are one of the state's biggest expenses, consuming a sizable portion of the annual state budget. The cost of MassHealth, the state's Medicaid program, which serves more than 2 million Massachusetts residents, accounts for nearly 40% of overall spending. For information on the listening sessions, visit the State Division of Insurance's website at www.mass.gov/Division of Insurance. Police officer dies after battling cancer. Smith served in Essex. It's written by Stephen Hagan. A former Essex police officer has died after battling cancer. Besides Essex, Boxford Police Officer Robert Smith, 36, served in police departments in Topsfield, Wenham, and Middleton before joining the Boxford Force in 2021. According to Boxford Police Chief James Ryder, Smith died Thursday, August 13th. He was one of the most well-liked people I've ever met, he said. Ryder said he had known Smith for many years, going back to Smith's time as a student at Masconomet Regional High School. Rob made sure he reached out to say hello, Ryder said. Rob would often address me and ask how my day was going. Smith was well-liked by his fellow officers, he said. It's a testament to Rob that many police departments wanted him, Ryder said. He was one of the nicest, kindest, most genuine people I've ever met. It will be a loss for everyone who knew him. Essex Police Chief Tom Shamshak said Smith's tenure in Essex began in 2012 and ran to the fall of 2013. He said the legacy Smith left behind was immeasurable. He was one of my best friends, Shamshak said. He was one of the most thoughtful and helpful officers anybody could ever encounter. Everybody that encountered him saw him, and he was always smiling. Even when he left the department, he maintained the friendships he formed when he was with us. According to a Facebook posting on the Boxford Police page, Smith served with, quote, professionalism, integrity, and a genuine commitment to the communities he was entrusted to protect. To those who had the privilege of working alongside him, Rob was much more than a fellow officer, the posting reads. His presence within our department and the relationships he built throughout his career will be remembered for years to come. He's survived by his wife, Judy, his children, Jeffrey and Michael, his parents, Bob and Mandy Smith, his brother, Andrew, his sister, Jenny, his nieces and nephews, his in-laws, Sherry O'Reilly and Larry DiLorenzo, his brothers-in-law, Alan and the late Jeffrey DiLorenzo, and his best friend, Mike Balsley. Visitation hours for Smith are 3 to 7 p.m. Thursday, August 20th, at the Mackey Funeral Home, 128 South Street in Middleton, according to his obituary. Smith's funeral mass will be at 10:30 a.m. Friday at St. Rose of Lima Parish, 12 Park Street in Topsfield. In lieu of flowers, the family is establishing a scholarship in Smith's name for graduating high school students interested in law enforcement. Donations can be sent to the Boxford Police Department, care of the Robert Smith Scholarship Fund, and that's addressed at 285 Ipswich Road in Boxford, Mass., 01921. Checks should be payable to the Officer Robert Smith Scholarship Fund. And finally, wrapping up the front page, 100 Candles. Family celebrates matriarch's birthday. It's written by Joanne McKenzie. It all began with a pink house and a cat. Mom and Dad were living in Boston back then. We were asked by friends who had a pink house in Annisquam to mind their cat while they were away. That, says Jeff Marston, one of five Marston siblings, is how his mother Shirley, who turns 100 on Tuesday, August 18th, fell in love with Annisquam. It's where her family has gathered this summer to celebrate her birthday, complete with a cake with 100 candles and family portrait. Shirley Marston, a native of Sacramento, California, had moved with her banker husband Garth and her growing brood of children from Seattle to San Francisco to Washington, D.C., where her husband served as chairman of the Federal Home Loan Bank. Finally, the family landed in Boston, where her late husband Garth was chairman and chief executive officer of the Provident Institution for Savings. Then came the cat-sitting job. With her kids grown and scattered in colleges across the country, Shirley Marston longed for a place where they could all come home to roost. She found it in Annisquam. For the next several decades, for four long languid months a year, through a series of rented cottages, this boaty, beachy, manicured enclave of the city of Gloucester became the Marston summer camp, where all summer long, all members of the family and their growing generations of progeny, including great-grandchildren, would gather. Here, Shirley Marston, who her son Jeff describes as a quiet, loving, but very active mother, could relax from her otherwise very active life. Shirley Marston may have been quiet, but beneath that quiet demeanor, she was in her own way quite determined. On the West Coast, she had been an active member of Planned Childhood. On the East Coast, she'd fallen in love with New England history and served as program director of the Society for the Preservation of New England Antiquities. By the sound of it, she was also quite intrepid. She had to be to marry into the Marston family. Her father-in-law, Otis Reed Doc Marston, who lived from 1894 to 1979, was an American writer, historian, and legendary Grand Canyon river runner. Her father, Captain William Harrington Marston, went to sea out of Boston as a teenager, became a businessman master mariner, and eventually owned a large shipping business sailing the Pacific out of San Francisco. Her husband, Garth, may have been best known in these parts as a banker, but out west in the Grand Canyon, he, like his father, was a river runner. On YouTube, you can find a video of Garth Marston taking his 21-year-old bride, Shirley, for quite a ride, wild river ride. That took some grit, which, in her own quiet way, Shirley Marston seems to have plenty of, which may be why she feels so at home in the city of Gloucester, where, by the way, Jeff Marston himself, an Annisquam resident, says that Pink House is still screamingly pink. Here's this week's Fishtown Local column written by Gordon Baird. Today's headline, The Strait of Warm Ooze. Get it? Hormuz? Strait of Warm Ooze. Some folks say that the reflecting pool repairs in Washington have come to mirror the Trump administration's souring second term with its mixture of a willingness to skirt laws, expend millions of dollars, ignore facts, and punish truth tellers in service of the president's demand to put his stamp on the Capitol. The Interior Department, led by former North Dakota Governor Doug Burgum, handed out no-bid contracts and squelched doubts about the costs and risks of the pool project, bouncing falsehoods on top of falsehoods, just to please his boss, DJT. And yes, while the pool did leak thousands of gallons of water, it was Trump's rushed 4th of July deadline that left an ominous, inevitable shadow over the project. The process began when Trump selected his director of hospitality. Can't make this stuff up. When Trump selected his director of hospitality at his New Jersey golf course, with no background in pools or engineering, to run the project. So he attended the World of Concrete, this is real, trade show, and decided on using polyurea, a resinous waterproofing, but not really a confirmed or tested solution. But the fact that it came in American flag blue cinched it for Mr. Trump. Problem was, his tariffs on China and new trade rules had limited its availability. So another outfit took on the job of making a large emergency batch of it. In the meantime, they had enlisted a company called Atlantic Coatings, who had never done government work or an application of this scale, to apply it. Trump said they previously worked on one of his club's pools. So a first-time contractor was paid millions of dollars to apply an untested solution designed by a golf club manager to a national landmark with no bids or limits. What could go wrong? Federal laws required the project to face reviews by an independent board to protect landmarks, but the Interior Secretary swept those hurdles aside. Interior approved more no-bid contracts, even while other companies tried to bid on it, and ignored preservationists and other experts because it was sure it knew better. It also built in a 20% profit margin for every company involved, despite the National Park Service calling the nearly $15 million price tag, quote, inflated and, quote, excessive. So Burgum blocked all scrutiny or discussions, even while the effort to plug the leaky gaps between the sections in the 2,000-foot-long pool failed. But the renovations were declared finished in June, leaks and all. It'll last for 100 years, boasted Trump. Yet it began peeling within a week. Burgum, a billionaire crony, pushed the story of vandalism on the entire pool liner, and Trump took up the cry. Making matters worse, algae began returning with a vengeance because the installed no-bid nano-bubblers were removed, designed to prevent algae. Nano-bubblers were removed for a show-off promo event for the Ultimate Fighting Championship on Trump's birthday at the Lincoln Memorial, another of his pet projects. Trump claimed vandals had thrown in fertilizer to cause the algae, a fact disproved by his own park service. His claims of 300 long knifings of the liner also turned out false, and Atlantic Coatings, the applier of the liner, admitted it had never worked on any of Trump's pools, While the press squealed at the lies and the facts, Burgum doubled down on the vandalism to Trump, who loved it because it fit with his narrative of Washington, D.C. as a hotbed overrun with crime that only he could tame. The algae began hitting the fan when arrests were made by bystanders who had merely reached in the water to touch the liner pieces floating by, including a three-time Olympic canoer. One woman was arrested for littering just for putting her hand in the water. Seven were arrested and charged while Trump expressed pleasure at their charging. They were charged with felonies, the most serious charge for damage over $1,000 for touching even the smallest piece of floating liner. They face prison time if convicted. Jeanine Pirro, the U.S. attorney, was gung-ho on the prosecutions, but as videos began circulating of the defendants reaching into the water, the reality gap between Trump and the truth widened, as it so often does. Pirro reversed course after investigations and videos show the liner had been misapplied and had disintegrated before anyone ever reached in. It had been rushed and flawed from the beginning, she said, the evidence showed. The cases against the seven were dismissed, and Trump hit the roof. Pirro, however, went on the offensive and blamed Burgum in sharp language right to his face in front of Trump. She said he'd misled the president to protect himself and his department. Trump badmouthed her to the press, but backed off on firing her, for now. Meanwhile, the reflecting pool was in sad shape for the 250th, fenced off, drained, and pathetic. Instead of a giant blue mirror, visitors saw only dead red algae with pieces of shredded liner blowing in the wind. They're still trying to fix it. And time for an editorial. What to know about voting in September 1 primary? Politics used to take the summer off, no more. Labor Day is still weeks away, but election season has already begun, and there are several deadlines for voters to consider before September 1st, the date of the Massachusetts primary. Even that date is unusual this year, as the elections usually don't occur until after the holiday, which this year falls on September 7. Lawmakers changed the date in the hopes of driving higher turnout. Here's hoping it works, as turnout in state and local races have been sporadic at best in recent years. There are races on both the Democratic and Republican ballots that will shape the general election November 3, so residents should make sure their voices are heard now. And it's not too late. Deadline to register to vote is Saturday, August 22nd. You can do that in person, online, or via mail. If you're registering by mail, make sure your voter registration form is postmarked by August 22nd. You can also change your party affiliation from Democrat to Republican or vice versa at this time. Those with party affiliations can cast a ballot only for those parties they are registered with. So-called unenrolled voters can pick one or the other. If you want to vote by mail, you need to request a ballot by August 25th through your local city or town hall. You'll receive a ballot in the mail, which has to reach your local election office or official drop box by 8 p.m. September 1st, the close of polls on Election Day. You can also vote early in person between August 22nd and August 28th, the state's early voting period. Hours differ by community, so check with your city or town hall. Finally, you can vote on Election Day, September 1, between 7 a.m. and 8 p.m. Again, your local government office has the details on your voting location. And before we move to the actual ballots, let's give thanks to those city and town clerks who work to make these elections run smoothly across all iterations under challenging circumstances. There are several races with statewide and local implications. On the Republican side, there are two gubernatorial candidates, Michael Minogue of Hamilton, the former chairman of A-Biomed, and Barnstable's Brian Shortsleeve, who served as MBTA chief under Governor Charlie Baker. There's one lieutenant governor candidate on a ballot, corrections officer Sean Oliver, a New Bedford City Councilor. Peabody City Councilor Ann Manning Marin, who was removed from the ballot after her nomination papers were found to have fraudulent signatures on Tuesday, launched a write-in campaign. There is more action on the Democratic ballot, where 6th District Congressman Seth Moulton is challenging incumbent U.S. Senator Ed Markey in a race that has generally pitted Markey's progressive credentials against Moulton's call for fresh blood in the halls of Congress. The busiest race of summer is the one to succeed Moulton in the 6th District, which spans Essex County. The candidates are Beth Andrus Beck, it's a hyphenated last name, a Middleton software engineer, Jamie Belsito, a former state representative and current Topsfield town moderator, Daniel Koh, K-O-H, a former Biden administrative aide and one-time chief of staff to Boston Mayor Marty Walsh, Linfield businessman John Beccia, Maria Lancaster, a Salem veterinarian and former State Department official, and Andover State Rep Tram Nguyen. Few Beacon Hill lawmakers are being challenged for re-election, but there are two locally worth noting. State Representative Dawn Shand of Newburyport is facing Salisbury lawyer Stephen Roth and incumbent Drew Tarr of Gloucester, who is serving out the term of late State Representative Ann-Margaret Fronte, is being challenged by Sarah Wilkinson, the former chair of the Rockport Select Board. There are plenty of ways for residents to be heard in this primary and beyond. Here's hoping for a strong turnout. City looking into building public fishing pier. It's written by Bobby Grady. Gloucester's looking into the possibility of partnering with the State Division of Marine Fisheries to build a public access fishing pier on a portion of the property at 112 Commercial Street. The idea being looked into by the mayor's office was discussed by Harbor Master Chris Lucido and City Council President Tony Gross during the August 12 Waterways Board meeting. Both Lucido and Gross said the idea is in the very early preliminary stages and there is not a lot of information at the time, but there has been no commitment to constructing a pier. Lucido told the Gloucester Daily Times that both the city and the Division of Marine Fisheries think it is a good idea. None of it is set in stone at this point. The city is just exploring the idea at this point, Lucido said during the meeting. At 112 Commercial Street, about 200 feet of waterfront, city-owned property has been closed off to the public for a number of years. Now, Lucido said officials are looking to find a use for the site that would benefit the community. Thanks for listening. Please be sure to join us again tomorrow for another edition of the Gloucester Daily Times. Have a nice evening.